All right, shit shows. Breathe to Heal is officially back, and this time we're going deeper than ever before. The theme of this third round is release and receive, releasing everything that's been stuck for way too long so you can finally receive the peace, love, and safety I know you've been craving. The 7-week healing journey goes beyond talk therapy by working directly with your nervous system using breathwork, somatic practices, and parts work to give you the kind of healing your body has been waiting for. This is all facilitated by fellow shit show member and certified somatic and breathwork practitioner Teresa, who's just added some fresh breathwork certifications to her toolkit. And the best part of all, this all happens right within the shit show healing community. So think of it like a healing journey where you can show up exactly as you are, like you're hanging out with your friends on the couch in your pajamas, instead of feeling like you're in some stuffy environment. So this all kicks off on Tuesday, January 13th, and early bird pricing is on through December 11th. So you, yes you, the person that's been wanting to sign up for the past two rounds but hasn't, how about we do the damn thing already, okay? Head to adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal. That is breathe with an E at the end. adultchildpodcast.com/BREATHE to heal to learn more and grab your damn spot. The inner teenager is the part of us that started to see the truth about our families and the world and had absolutely no idea what to do with that reality. They were stuck between childhood and adulthood, old enough to notice the hypocrisy, too young to leave, and forced to find their own ways to survive. Here are the four of the most common inner teen archetypes, keeping in mind that most of us will see ourselves in more than one. Number one, the rebel teen. Fuck this. This is the part of you that clocked the hypocrisy before you had words for it. The adult said one thing and did another, demanded respect while being cruel, enforced rules they didn't follow. Sometimes this looked like talking back, sneaking out, getting high. Sometimes it was silent eye rolls and half-assing everything. Underneath the attitude is the grief of realizing no one is coming to save you. Core feelings, indignation and powerlessness. Anger, the fury of seeing the truth and having zero real power to change it. Core coping mechanisms, rebellion and self-sabotage, breaking rules, burning bridges, or tanking your own goals as a way to reclaim power and say, you don't own me. Two, the fixer, therapist, friend teen. This is the inner teen who became the emotional parent way too early, the one who cleaned up messes, smoothed over fights, checked on siblings, comforted mom after dad raged, and listened to friends' crisis at 2 a.m. They were praised as mature, responsible, such a good influence, while secretly anxious, exhausted, and on high alert. Their job was to hold it all together while silently falling apart. Core feelings, crushing responsibility and guilt, the sense that it's on you to keep everyone okay, and if something goes wrong, it's somehow your fault. Core coping mechanisms, fixing and overfunctioning, managing crisis, caretaking, advising, rescuing, and organizing other people's lives to avoid feeling your own fear, anger, and needs. The vanished numb teen. This is the teen who disappeared in plain sight, quiet, easy, spending hours alone in their room, buried in books, shows, music, games, or online worlds. Maybe teachers said they were the smart but not living up to potential. The family liked them low maintenance and out of the way. Feelings were too big and nowhere safe to take them, so they learned to float, body present and somewhere else. Core feelings, alienation and quiet hopelessness. The sense of being on the outside looking in, not really belonging anywhere and secretly wondering, does any of this actually matter? Core coping mechanism, numbing and disappearing, dissociation, sleep fantasies, scrolling substances, or overusing content as a way to not feel, not think, and not be fully here. Four, the starving for love teen. This is the part of you that clung to crushes, hookups, best friends, or fantasy relationships like a life raft, believing if someone finally chooses me, I'll be okay. They fell hard and fast, obsessed over text, replayed every interaction, and tolerated chaos and crumbs to avoid being alone. They confused intensity with intimacy, always scanning, do you still want me? Did I mess it up? core feelings: panic about abandonment and unworthiness, a deep fear of being left, replaced, or forgotten, paired with the belief, if you walk away, it proves I was never enough. Core coping mechanisms: clinging and chasing, over texting, over giving, over explaining, tolerating mistreatment, or getting stuck in fantasy as a way to try to secure connection and outrun the terror of being alone. So which of these inner teens do you relate to, see yourself in? Are there certain situations where your inner teen tends to show up? How has your inner teen actually been trying to protect you? And what is your teen need from your adult self that they didn't get back then? So I relate to many of these. The rebel, fuck this teen, fuck this shit version. It's definitely there. Started in middle school and really embraced this and kind of wore this as like a badge of honor. And where I really have seen this show up in my life as an adult has been in work situations. And like, as I've shared before, once I feel like a superior or a boss sees something in me that I see as being something good, like an asset, and it's being portrayed or painted in a way that's like a liability, I'm just going to burn it all down. And that has played out in basically every single job that I had before this job. The fixer therapist teen, that really showed up for me more so. That shows up more as my inner child, kind of before I took on this scapegoat identified patient role. That the fixer therapist definitely showed up more. The numb teen, this is absolutely like the most present version of my inner teen that shows up today. But what I was thinking about was particularly like this last question of what is my inner teen need for me? And in particular, I was trying to think about what my inner teen needs from me that's different than what my inner child needs from me. And the biggest thing, I thought of like four or five things. So like one of them is they need respect, like more so than they need comfort. So my inner teen needs to know that like I'm, you know, like taking her seriously, that I respect her anger, that I respect her intelligence. Like she will shut down if she feels like she's being talked down to, or I'm like, you know, like she's being therapied at. If I'm trying to come at her from the perspective of a therapist, she needs like honest conversations and no sugarcoating. Like this is the part of me when I was sharing, I don't know, in a recent meeting about how I just like can't stand people that are just happy and nice all the time. Like that is my inner teen. She just fucking hates people like that. She needs me to clearly name like the harm that's been done to her, and like that the permission to be pissed off, and like the permission to be pissed off for as long as she needs to be. She also needs more of like a collaboration and a feeling of choice in my inner child needs. So it's like giving her options between like, does she need me to do something, or does she just need me to be with her? Does she want my opinion, or does she just want me to listen? And then also like she needs me like in the real time. Like it's less about like providing like retroactive comfort to what happened in the past, but she needs me to show up differently in the here and now. And the last thing I guess too is like a permission to grow up, but that doesn't mean necessarily like betraying ourselves and realizing how there are aspects of her that we really do like about ourselves, and that we don't want to get, you know, rid of that, but just shifting things so that these characteristics and traits and personality is not showing up as much in a harmful way. And that's the other thing too, like being able to not shame, but also explain, you know, how, what the impact of our decisions are, just having some accountability there. So that's my two cents, and go ahead, Terry.
Thanks, Andrea. Hello, everybody. Righto. So as an actual teen, I would say that I was the rebel teenager in public life. And I was the numb teen in private. I want to clarify that as a rebel, I didn't look like what a rebel teen usually looks like. So I didn't drink alcohol. I didn't smoke. I didn't do any drugs. I was in a good school and got decent grades. I didn't fall in with the bad crowd. And it's not because these things weren't accessible to me. Like from the age of 16, I started going to house parties and to clubs where alcohol was completely available. But I had decided that I didn't want to be an alcoholic like my father. And so I voluntarily abstained from all of these things. When I was by myself, which was a lot of the time by choice, I kind of dissociated and got lost into my own little world, mostly by playing video games or making music. I kind of became an insomniac during my senior school years, and I would stay up really late on the family computer, DJing silently in chat rooms with just like my headphones on and my turntables plugged into the computer input. Where I was a rebel was in my utter contempt for authority figures. So that was my parents, obviously, who I kind of gave up on when I was a teenager. I didn't feel like I had to fix people. I didn't feel responsible for their emotions. I didn't feel responsible for their well-being at all. I abandoned them before they abandoned me. I don't know, maybe they abandoned me when I was a child because I was a scapegoat child. As an adult now, I am moving into myself with the big S. I'm recognizing that both of these, the rebel and the numbing out teen, were my protectors. And I recognize the value that they brought to me. I recognize how they protected me from, what did they protect me from? They protected the exile who was feeling unseen, unheard. A point about being the rebel, and the reason why I didn't need to rebel outwardly, is because I already had the narrative in my family as the scapegoat child that I was a failure, that I was a problem. It didn't matter if I fucked up or if I achieved everything that could be achieved. The narrative was still that I was the fuck up. So, you know, I got good grades. I didn't do typically teenage bad things. I got into university, my first choice university. These things were ignored by my family because they weren't useful for the narrative that I was the problem child. So, as an adult, I recognize that these are protector parts, but they served a very valuable purpose and they still do. But I don't need them to protect my exile so much anymore. They are teaching me about myself now. I don't know how to verbalize that better. My protector part protected me by moving into analytical and observation mode. And so instead of being part of the world around me, I observed it from like an outsider's point of view. I looked at people, what they were doing, what their motivations were, and what led them to behave like that. So that included my family and everyone else. And this has given me a worldview which now I think is one of my biggest assets and something that my big S self can really use to my advantage and also for a good cause. So I'm going to leave it there. Looking forward to everyone else's shares. Thank you.
Thanks, dude. Go ahead, Kitty.
Terry, it was really helpful that you just said like how you felt you were in private and how you were out in the world. Because I was like looking at the reading and I was like, I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit of everything. But in my home, I was definitely the vanished, numb teen. And that's how I'm feeling now in my life. And I don't know what I need. I just feel really isolated and I knew it was going to get emotional. I'm doing my best to take care of myself, like eat well, get lots of sleep, go on walks, drink water. And like when I first started really like pushing those routines to take better care of myself, it brought me a lot of joy. Like I was like, oh, I'm really taking care of myself. Look at me, I'm killing it. And now I just feel like depressed and it doesn't seem like anything makes a difference. And I actually stopped going for my walks because I realized that when I get going on my walk, I can like clock it. When my heart rate hits like 120, I like burst into tears and I get really self-conscious because I'm in public. I mean, I'm in my neighborhood, but it's just so raw. But I do know that like history has showed me that when I get this vulnerable and I feel this messy, that some sort of shift is around the corner because I do push myself through and keep going. I will say the in the public, as a teen, I was definitely that like rebel teen. What stood out to me was like there's still numbing in that, right? In that description. And I was really cruel to other kids. It helped me feel safe. And I feel so gross saying that, but it's true. Anyway, yeah, I really appreciate the question of like, what does my inner teen need from me? Because I have no fucking clue. And I just keep doing what I need to do to take care of my body and my mind and coming here and meditating and, checking off the list. And like, I'll get through it. I'll get through it. But so much has happened in my life in the past 3 years that it's just like, it kind of feels if there's like one more thing, I'm just gonna melt into a puddle and live out of my car. And, oh no, just I think that numb teen protected me from the emotional neglect and chaos in my home with my mom's drinking and my dad's avoiding. And it's not protecting me now. It just feels awful, but I don't know any other way. Anyway, I hate crying in here, but thanks for listening.
Thanks, Terry, Katie, for sharing in those lights, because there is a lot of things that I can relate and reflect to. Finally, my legs have healed up enough. I went for a run this morning. It's the first time I've done it in a few weeks and almost close to a month, and realized that I had started abandoning a lot of the therapeutic things that I had been doing that were benefiting me, waking up early, running, maintaining my diet. And slowly just kind of let some other things creep back in. And I feel spoiled too, because like I do have like people around me here, in person as well, that are supportive. And I feel stuck oftentimes. And this is a perfect topic because that is a point of emphasis that has been brought up. It's like, you're acting like a teenager, you're acting like a kid. I get defensive in things. And looking at the reading, as a teenager, I mean, I did enough. I kept my GPA up. I passed all my classes. I would make sure my attendance was good. I would still skip school. I would still smoke pot. I would still go to like parties and drink. But I played football. I wrestled. I accelerated. I was a letterman. My GPA stayed at, at 3.4. I graduated, in the top 40 kids in my class. Like I did enough that you didn't question, and you wouldn't have known. That my childhood was as shitty as it was. And really, if I reflect on it, my mom, left our hometown and then like a year later asked, if I wanted to move, and I was the fuck out of there and literally buried it. And it wasn't even a cognitive fucking memory until an adult, until I experienced what I did with my kid's mom. And as I reflect on it and I look at it, I feel like each one of those is an equal part of me, the rebel, the therapist, the numb, the all of that, because they rotate in and out frequently, daily. I can go from any one of those stages at any point, and they're all relevant, and they all are trying to do the same thing, protecting me, and so like I start reflecting a lot. Like I said, I feel spoiled because I do have good community here, and this has been a safe haven. And then I start to question, it's like, what are the next steps? And I feel like all of those parts of my inner teenager are looking at me going, oh, it's time to grow up. That's what they need from me. That's what they're saying. You have kids now, they're being affected. It's reflecting the same message that's being passed to by people in my life. It's like, you have the answers, you've done the work, like you need to grow up and know that it's okay to let go of the past, and these things no longer hold any kind of, proxy to you, in those lights. Most of the people are dead and gone. They don't exist anymore. So why do these things like still haunt me in those ways? And, I think that's the message now. It's like they shouldn't. We've survived all of this shit that we went through, and we're sitting here today. Yeah, there's a few scars, but it's not, I'm not dead, alive. Light. What are the next steps? And that is, really to grow up, focus, like look at my kids. What do they need for me to be present for them in the same way that I needed to be present. I needed my parents to be present in that light. So, I am truly grateful that I get to have these experiences and these reflections in a place to actually organize these thoughts amongst other people who have had similar experiences and not be judged for it. So, like, part of me was thinking today, like, it's time to like leave the community, and kind of step aside. And then another part of me wants to hold on as well. And it's like, this is a safe haven, like, and it'll be here. So, I have been kind of distant lately, and I have been really focusing on some of the things that are here in front of me, and I realize, like, I will quickly lose myself in certain things and certain peoples and certain situations because I am a people pleaser, because I want to help, because I have that hero complex, that I want to help people who have experienced the similar traumas and the similar things. And, the atrocities that we suffered are not fair. And as adults, we deserve that fucking love too, that we never got. So you want to share that experience with others when you see that they're hurting. And that is probably my biggest fault, is that I will sacrifice myself to try to make others feel better, to get that love that they did not give. And I see those patterns now. So it is a beneficial thing to continue to show up here, to continue to reflect, and make these things an active daily presence in my life and continue to move forward, and share those experiences. So I appreciate y'all for continuing to share, for continuing to being raw in there, and as I continue to grow, I want to be able to share that experience with y'all as well. So I appreciate y'all. Thank you.
All right, Shitshows, did you know that iron deficiency is one of the most common nutritional gaps? It affects 1 in 3 adults, and especially women. It often shows up as fatigue, brain fog, weakness, brittle nails. But the problem is that most people don't realize that low iron may be the cause of these issues. That's why I'm here to tell you about Siderol from Pharma Nutra. This is a premium iron supplement powered by patented sucrosomial technology, which helps your body absorb 3 to 4 times more iron while also avoiding the common side effects of traditional iron supplements like nausea, constipation, and all that fun stuff. It is clinically proven to be comparable to IV iron and is formulated with just 2 ingredients, iron and vitamin C. It's vegan, allergen-free, gluten-free. You can take it anytime, anywhere. So if you are that 1 out of 3 with an iron deficiency, head to pharmanutra-us.com and use code adultchild for 10% off your first order. That is pharmanutra-us.com, promo code adultchild for 10% off today. Does anyone really know what hormones do? Like, there's so much talk around women's hormonal health, but most women are left even more confused about what it means for them and what the hell to do about that. So, shit shows, let's leave this confusion behind as we head into the holiday season, shall we? Hormone Harmony is a game changer for women struggling with hormonal imbalances that leave them exhausted both physically and mentally. It only contains science-based ingredients that bring back comfort, energy, clarity, confidence, and a sense of balance. Perfect for enjoying the holidays and heading into the new year energized. And Happy Mammoth, the company that produces Hormone Harmony, is famous for its zero compromise policy. No GMOs, artificial fillers or flavor, or any other junk. Only science-backed ingredients in amounts that are clinically proven. So this holiday season, give yourself or the woman in your life the gift of wellness. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code adultchild at checkout. That is happymammoth.com, code adultchild for 15% off today. All right, shit shows, the holidays are here. And if you still have names on your list, if you have gifts that you still need to buy, what the heck are you doing? Okay, because I've been telling you about Uncommon Goods for the past 2 months, who make holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. They look for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade. And they have something for everyone, for mom, dad, kids, teens, book lovers, sports fans, foodies, you name it, they got it. Listen to what I just stumbled upon. I just stumbled upon a crochet your own emotional support desk plant kit. a DIY kit for you to be able to crochet an emotional support desk plant. There's got to be somebody out there that has a crocheter in their life that needs this emotional support desk plant. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. And so to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/adultchild. That's uncommongoods.com/adultchild for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Thanks, Mitchell. You're not allowed to go anywhere. You know that.
Hey, everyone. Good to be back. Definitely feeling some emotional reverb from those last two shares. Mitchell, I definitely identify with, you know, that realization that, like, fuck, I got all these protectors. And I can see different points in my life where they've bubbled up. And further to that, it's like, wow, am I actually basically always kind of being commanded by one of these juggernauts? Like, that's what it feels like, honestly. I would say when I read the reading today the first time, the fixer jumped out right away. But as I kept reading, I realized that, like, one kind of leads to the other for me. Like, this fixer archetype, I was like the middle child growing up, and my mom was out of the house when I was really young. So I was mediating a lot between my brothers and my dad and fights and stuff like that. So I had this hero complex that, like, I'm doing okay in school, like, I've got dreams, like, I want to inspire that in my brothers and kind of be this example. But when I, you know, I became an adult, I would say, like, when I turned 30, I recognized that I don't really identify as an adult and that I was never really setting my own example. And this kind of fixer archetype, it leads to the, you know, starving for love archetype. Because, like, in my primary relationship, you know, the mother of my son, she's sort of the vanished teen type. And so in order to not feel that, like, core wound of being abandoned by mom, we kind of, like, I felt like I got closer to her by overperforming and renovating the house and just sort of being there when she had a hard day at work. But that's so exhausting. And ultimately, like, I was running a small business at the time and I was spread so thin, like, trying to be the fixer, the overachiever for every client I had. And I just fucking burnt out. I lost the business. And this was right the same year my son was born. So naturally, there's like a retreat from your partner as they refocus their efforts on a newborn. So, like, I just got hammered by the starving for love archetype. And there's no real simple fix for that right now. So it feels like I'm just oscillating between starving for love and, like, this fixer archetype, which are two kind of polar opposite feelings. One is, like, I'm worthless. I've already lost it all. I've lost touch with my friends. I was always there for them, and when I started spiraling, nobody cared about me, you know, this sort of broken narrative, but sort of very real to me at the same time. I'm just losing my train of thought. I think what I'm trying to get at is, like, what Katie said, like, feeling like your protectors, you know, they're not really protecting me. I know they are, you know, like, the feeling, like, the tsunami of loneliness that comes from growing up without a mom in the house. And, you know, not having a dad that's willing to, like, deal with emotions much, like, that's obviously much bigger and, like, all consuming than, like, the general, you know, the feeling of being embodied by one of these four protectors. So, yeah, it's just tough. So, thank you all again and looking forward to hearing from more of you.
Hi. Good morning from Wyoming. When I read this reading, obviously, I call her my little Jersey girl. She's my inner teen. She's like 17. I've done a lot of ISF therapy with her. She shows up at work. We all know about that. You know, fuck that guy, fuck this guy, fuck everybody, because that's my Jersey girl. And I really have worked with her to tell her, like, everybody doesn't deserve the big fuck you. I notice if I make a boundary and someone starts pushing that boundary, that she shows up. immediately. If someone, when my son was younger, if somebody messed with him, be it a teacher, another student, a friend, the Jersey girl would show up. But I sit with her a lot, and I understand why she's there, because growing up in such a, and I will call my home violent at times, she had to show up. So she's a good part, and I use her to my advantage now, but we do give her the once in a while because I have to. The fixer shows up in romantic, when I meet somebody in the beginning of a romantic relationship. I never knew that until, I mean, I've been married to the same guy for 15 years tomorrow. Yay, Nancy. But I love broken people. Hence why I love going to AA and NA meetings, because guess what? There's all these broken people who I can listen to and try to fix them. And it took me like going back after I lost my job and sitting in these really like, ooh, they were tough AA meetings, some tough old birds there, as I would say. And it really took me going back to those meetings and really listening and realizing that that fixer part is showing up for me. And I want to fix all these people. And guess what? The fixer, we can't do that. We can only try and fix ourselves. The vanishing numb teen. That was me in school, believe it or not, guys. I was really quiet. I was the kid who sat in the back. I wanted to fly under the radar. But that being said, I think I used to just disassociate in school and like forget what they were teaching me because I was so worried about what was going on in my home at the time and with my siblings at the time that I didn't pay attention in school. And it wasn't that I was the class clown not paying attention. I was the quiet kid in the back that nobody noticed. I call it the fat kid because that's what my family referred to me as, which is real fucking nice. And then that, like the starving, that, oh my gosh, I used to make up friends, like imaginary friends, but it shows up for me now when I go on a job interview or I don't get a call back after I like poured my life into this resume and this cover letter, and it shows up really bad. So it's been something I've been working with. And basically I gave her a break. That part, I told her, don't look for any more jobs because it hurt too much. So thank you for the topic. I really like it.
Terry started the ball with like in different scenarios, you're kind of different people or whatever. I mean, I was the rebel, the number, the fixer, but my dad, I was his sounding board. And so he would tell me how much he hated my brother and sister and how much every time he saw them, he wanted to punch them in the face. And so then in the performance of being the fixer and being like parentified basically to my father, I was also numbing because it was so awful to have to hear those things as a 12-year-old, an 11-year-old. And then there was the rebel would come in. Because my dad was a narcissist and an alcoholic, but it always just seemed to me that alcohol was not the problem. So I, you know, started drinking at an early age, started doing all the drugs, and that just continued well until now. So I don't really know if that was just kind of like an internal rebellion towards myself, because the thing that my teen wanted was to be seen, to just be acknowledged. Everything in my family was for the, I don't know how to do it. I cannot help you do it, but you need to do it. You need to look a certain way. You need to pass your classes. You need to be good at sports. You need to do all these things. For example, I got confirmed in the Catholic Church and I was on one about, it was Catholic. So, I mean, you can be on one about all the things. But so I'm asked, like, I'm like, why do I have to do this? And my parents' answer was, so someday if you want to get married, you can get married in the Catholic Church. And I'm like, that is so dumb. There was never really an answer of any kind of behavior in my house that actually connected to the humans that we were. It was all just, I don't know how to help you, but you need to look a certain way. And so it just was so just truly terrible. Like, it was truly terrible. My sister and I are doing some deep work together. She's like 3 years older than me, but we're going to the gym. And she was like, she said, I just want to have a body of a woman whose mother loved her. Cause she, like, we kind of, you know, like eat with just shove things in our faces and just kind of do all these like numbing kind of things, you know, with our bodies. But it's like, yeah, I can confirm our mother fucking hated you and still does. And it's like, it's just unbelievable. It's, you know, and it's like, yeah, like imagine treating your body like your parents loved you and that they gave you this, they taught you this way to care for yourself and love yourself and know yourself and listen to yourself and all of these things. And so a lot of these, you know, were the rebel, the number, the fixer, they were still just performances and not even at all like who I am. And so my recent like trip out has been, I imagine myself now that I have closed the loop as like this kind of like cup, and the cup is empty, and but it's myself, and now I can put whatever I want in my container, in my cup, in my space. And then when I go out into the world and I get super like anxious and like freaked out about people, I at the beginning of this understanding of like myself, I could just see like the sides of the cup, like it's a clay cup, like a little bit sandy, like kind of start disintegrating. And I would get all this anxiety of like, fuck, I just found myself and I need to get this patch back up. And it's like, no, you don't. Like the way that you keep yourself in with your cup is you just focus and you just stay inside of your container. Like you don't start worrying about the image of the walls around you. Like you just focus on yourself.
I think I was scattered in all the different categories when I was a teenager. I am the youngest of four in a alcoholic family, a toxic narrative of a lot of narcissistic abuse. And anyway, I desperately wanted to be included. I wanted to be seen. I wanted to fix my family so that everybody could love each other. I was very tenderhearted and kind. And yet just egged and egged and egged until I exploded. And then the narrative was, look at you, you're the one with an anger problem. You're the one that's wrong with this family. And that's the narrative that followed me all throughout. I desperately wanted to escape that. I had a suicide attempt when I was 14. I came really close. And after that, seeing that there was absolutely no escape, I was never going to be seen. I was never going to be understood. I was never going to be included. I was never going to feel the love that I wanted to feel. And like desperately wanting to be seen, but terrified of being noticed. A lot of drinking, promiscuity, smoking, as rebellious as I could be, in school suspensions, failing classes, and just... And all of that just fed the narrative of I was the one that was wrong with the family. And that followed me all throughout. I made two significant attempts to, this is kind of going off topic. I made two significant attempts to come back to my family, you know, after I got sober in 2015. And that narrative just, they won't let go of it. So I went no contact last year. I've done a lot of IFS work and parts work around my inner teenager. And when I first joined this group last year, I was working with my inner teen that had attempted the suicide. And that was, thank goodness for this group. Thank goodness for this group. And somebody that is avoidant attachment, I was terrified to be a part of this group because I was so avoidant, but I needed people. And it was so hard. I almost left. And I'm so grateful that I stayed. Just fast forward to now, the inner teen that is left, that is just that very, very tender-hearted, deeply empathetic part of me that just really struggles to see mistreatment between people, still wants to help people heal. And when I was a teenager, the fix-it part, I would go to any lengths to sit and listen to you and help you. I wanted to bring you to a space where you felt better, because if I could do that for you, somehow I was going to be fixing me at the same time. And of course, that was never the case. But that became one of my greatest assets, is sitting with people and witnessing them and guiding them. So I just celebrated a year with the shit show, and I've been sober since 2015, but there's the relational trauma that I endured, that I came here with. It's because of this group. It's because of the shit show. It's because of all of you that I'm able to sit here calmly and say that I love myself, that I'm so happy to have a family of choice, a tribe. Yeah, so I think that finishes it up.
All right, shit shows. Breathe to Heal is officially back, and this time we're going deeper than ever before. The theme of this third round is release and receive, releasing everything that's been stuck for way too long so you can finally receive the peace, love, and safety I know you've been craving. The 7-week healing journey goes beyond talk therapy by working directly with your nervous system using breathwork, somatic practices, and parts work to give you the kind of healing your body has been waiting for. This is all facilitated by fellow shit show member and certified somatic and breathwork practitioner Teresa, who's just added some fresh breathwork certifications to her toolkit. And the best part of all, this all happens right within the shit show healing community. So think of it like a healing journey where you can show up exactly as you are, like you're hanging out with your friends on the couch in your pajamas, instead of feeling like you're in some stuffy environment. So this all kicks off on Tuesday, January 13th, and early bird pricing is on through December 11th. So you, yes you, the person that's been wanting to sign up for the past two rounds but hasn't, how about we do the damn thing already, okay? Head to adultchildpodcast.com/breathe to heal, that is breathe with an E at the end, adultchildpodcast.com/BREATHE to heal, to learn more and grab your damn spot.